considered America's most contaminated area, the Hanford Nuclear Reservation. And so this is going to be a great talk about science, politics, policy, decision-making, environmental cleanup, and water. Jerry was a sponsor of Initiative 297, which led to the end of the Department of Energy's use of unlined trenches at Hanford as a national radioactive waste dump, and it was passed by Washington voters in 2004. And since its founding in 1987, part of America Northwest has been on the forefront of lobbying efforts for the cleanup of Hanford and for all of U.S. Department of Energy nuclear weapons production sites. Mr. Paul was also the principal author and director of the 1986 statewide referendum that blocked the federal government's selection of Hanford as the nation's high-level nuclear waste dump from 1940. And he's also been involved in co-authoring Washington state legislation such as the Models Toxic Control Act, state Superfund and toxic waste cleanup laws passed by early as Initiative 97. Jerry's also mentioned to me that if any of you are interested in working on a research project or independent studies related to Hanford, that there are many opportunities and good topics, so you can talk with him after the talk. He received his bachelor's degree from Clark University and his law degree from the University of Washington Law School. Let's give a warm welcome to Jerry Paul.
Thank you very much. And now I know why my hair is gray with all those things and spending so much time on Hanford. This is what radiation does to you. It's wonderful to be here this morning. How many people have been out to Hanford at all, or the Tri-Cities? We have one person who used to live there and a smattering people. The relationship between Hanford's problems and water are integral. You all know that water is a scarce resource in eastern Washington, and we are battling over it tremendously. Hanford, as we're going to talk about, is a grand potential resource for water. And yet, as the Yakima Nation and the state of Washington are involved in litigation, that resource is too contaminated to be used, the groundwater resource. And the question is, what is the price should be paid for that? How will it be cleaned up? Will it be cleaned up? And will it be cleaned up in time to protect the Columbia River from further contamination? So we're going to get rid of the wireless connection is now connected. Because we don't need that. And can you hear me okay? You didn't hear the question, so. Okay. And we'll get the cursor right over here, and we'll get going. There are tremendous issues for Hanford. The groundwater is highly contaminated, and we're going to talk about that. We have 53 million gallons of liquid high-level nuclear waste sitting in tanks at Hanford. A million gallons have leaked at least, if not more. We're going to talk about what the threat is to the Columbia River and the groundwater from those tanks. Those wastes, the high-level nuclear wastes, are the product of plutonium production reprocessing, we call it, where spent fuel rods were taken out of 9 reactors along the river and then melted down in nitric acid to extract plutonium for the weapons program, starting with the Trinity test and then the Nagasaki bomb. Over 50 years of plutonium production, Hanford is the most contaminated place in the Western Hemisphere, and the only places in the world more contaminated than Hanford, and are actually far more contaminated, are the Russian, the Soviet Union's nuclear weapon processing plants, where their liquid high-level nuclear waste tanks, people may have heard, suffered an explosion, devastating and spreading contamination over hundreds of kilometers. You and I can't throw our pizza boxes in an unlined trench in our backyards. Your federal government, until 2004, thought it was okay to use unlined trenches to dispose of radioactive waste. We're going to talk a bit about exposure and risk assessment and the role for the public and tribes in the cleanup of Hanford. As I said, 53 million gallons. Here is a map of Hanford. The Columbia River is the line that runs through the site for 50 miles. This is also now the Hanford Reach National Monument, the only national monument in America to contaminate it for unrestricted public use, but a great tourist attraction. Along the river are 9 reactors, along the horn of the river there, a nuclear fuel processing center, and in the central part of the reservation is where they melted down the fuel rods and where the high-level nuclear wastes are. What you see here are 80 square miles of area where the groundwater is contaminated above drinking water standards and it's flowing towards the Columbia River. Over 200 square miles are contaminated to some degree. So here we have the 80 square miles and different plumes of contaminants heading towards the Columbia River. Let's see. The largest plume, this is tritium, which flows freely with the groundwater because tritium is a radioactive form of hydrogen, replaces the regular hydrogen in a water molecule. We have a large and spreading mass of carbon tetrachloride in this area that is spreading every year. We have a uranium plume here. We have chromium and another chromium and cesium and strontium at 1,000 times the drinking water standard flowing into the river near the old N reactor over here. At this reactor, the Department of Energy's predecessor in the early 1960s opened this reactor and said, "We agree to stop using river water and pumping the contaminated water straight into the river. So we're going to discharge the water from the reactor into 2 half-mile-long ditches next to the river, slowing down the contaminants entering the river." And that worked for a couple of years until the soil burden was so hot that it was essentially like taking a dirty sponge, pouring tap water on it. What comes out the bottom, of course, immediately is dirt. Those trenches are so radioactive that if you started running at the cooler end towards the reactor, you would be dead before you reached the other half mile near the reactor. Here's a picture of the famous White Bluffs of the Columbia River, which inspired the National Monument designation. Here is a Ecology Department slide of what their strategy is for dealing with the contaminants and protecting the Columbia River. So here you have pits, burial trenches, and landfills. Now, notice they've got a nice little cap on top of it. Doesn't exist. High-level nuclear waste tanks right here, leaking down. Soil liquid waste discharge sources, which have leaked down. The plants, effluent. And then through the vadose zone, the soil column, and to the river. But the Department of Energy, I wonder if we can get this slide to go up a little bit. Is there a way of doing that?
This bit here.
Okay. All right. I can tell you what this is. there is no plan to clean up the groundwater at Hanford. The current approach, which has been in place for 10 years, is simply to have Band-Aids put on the groundwater problems. So the Department of Energy is required on a schedule called the Hanford Cleanup Agreement to clean up the soils along the Columbia River by the year 2012. The goal that the public insisted on was to allow for unrestricted public use of the Hanford Reach National Monument and the shoreline, the water, by the year 2018. That requires a plan to clean up the groundwater. Instead, we have small projects to deal with particular problems, try to stop contaminants from entering the river, but nothing to actually clean up the groundwater to allow for unrestricted public use. This is from an environmental impact statement prepared by the Department of Energy a few years ago, showing what the cancer risk is from using Hanford's groundwater today. If you were to drink 2 liters a day as an adult, what would the cancer risk be? The federal government sets the safe drinking water standards on a cancer risk of one fatal cancer for every 10,000 adults exposed to the contaminants in their drinking water. This area is above 400 millirem, which is 100 times the drinking water standard. That means 100 people out of 10,000 would die of cancer if they were to drink 2 liters a day. So we're talking about extreme high risk from this area. This is where the processing plants are, right in here, and the high-level nuclear waste tanks. This is the fuel fabrication area, the 300 area, with the uranium plume and some other contaminants right along the river. So essentially, you have a 1% fatal chance of cancer if you were to use this. Now, 1% for an adult, I'll be talking about, means 3 to 10% for a child. Here's what happens under their model if we go into the future to the year 2040. You see the mass heading towards the Columbia River. Now we have in 2100, you see, it's grown substantially and is heading towards the Columbia River this way as well as this way. And then in the year 2700, you see a new mass reaching the river this direction. This is if we do nothing to clean up the groundwater and do not remove all the source term. Hanford's high-level nuclear waste tanks are the single largest threat to the health of the Columbia River. The Department of Energy claims that these are stable, monitored, and have not recently leaked. This is testimony from the Secretary of Energy saying that we monitor those tanks for any additional leakage, anything that would indicate instability, and we find none, and then said that the contamination is not moving. Now, we issued a report by a hydrogeologist who used to work at Hanford and was in charge of monitoring the soil column for contaminants, who found, and I'll talk about this in just a moment, that indeed there have been recent leaks, which the Energy Department has not reported. And as Senator Cantwell said, when the Army Corps says it's imperative we accelerate this project and empty tanks, you disagree? Yes. So the Energy Department's plan is to build a treatment plant for the tank wastes that is now $8 billion over budget and delayed to open until the year 2019, if it ever operates. And then it's only designed to deal with half of the waste in the tanks. So the threat is, even if you build the treatment plant, the tanks will continue to leak. This is a computer-simulated model of the contaminants, cesium and strontium contamination, gamma emitters, underneath what is called the TY tank farm, which is six high-level nuclear waste tanks, shown by these structures right here. This is surface, and this is the depth below the surface level. Right here, you have groundwater. This was obtained by using dry boreholes and putting gamma sensors down the boreholes. Very sensible approach, so sensible that the geophysicists who designed it were fired for insisting that it go forward. Then in 1996, the Secretary of Energy, hearing about this, ordered that the geohydrologists and geophysicists be rehired and be given charge of the project to continue mapping. And that continued for a couple of years till their funding was eliminated again. As you can see right here, there is a hit of gamma emitters right at the groundwater. The Department of Energy's model, an official claim for why they don't need to go fast, is that no contaminants from that are heavy and slower than technetium and tritium will reach groundwater for over 2,000 years. And yet, we have this clear evidence today. So in 50 years, we've reached groundwater. John Broder, our hydrogeologist consultant, found that by examining the boreholes between two of the tanks, TY-103 and TY-105, he went back and looked at the monitoring logs and found that there was a 50-fold raise in the gamma contamination between these two tanks below the surface, below the level of the tank itself. One of the other tanks had a substantial leak, which was not reported. Remember, these are called stable. The depth of contamination shows that if essentially you've got a new hit of contamination down here and you don't have anything right here, you know that it came from the bottom of the tank. The Energy Department disputes that. Here's a picture. The significance of this is that tank TY-102, they claim, hasn't leaked. Yet, the Department of Energy's own Grand Junction office examined the borehole results in 1997 and said the contamination most likely resulted from leakage from tank TY-102. If you declare that it's not a leaker, then you don't add more monitoring around it. You don't have any urgent plan for cleaning it up, and that's what we're faced with. The whistleblower, who was then removed from the project again, said this was an example of DOE and contractors' obfuscation, incompetence, and outright lies. The Ecology Department is not doing anything to enforce taking action on this tank. The Department of Energy has repeatedly been found to try to hide the ball about leaks from the high-level waste tanks. In 1980, the department's own inspector general found Hanford's existing waste management policies keep publicity about possible tank leaks to a minimum. In 1989, the GAO said DOE does not collect sufficient data and studies do not provide convincing support for the claim that the impact of tank leaks will be low or non-existent. One of the interesting stories here is that in 1989, the GAO found that the Department of Energy was monitoring only for ruthenium beneath the tanks in the groundwater. Ruthenium has a half-life of 6 months. It was chosen because it would decay before it hit groundwater. And that was the only radionuclide they were monitoring for at the time, the GAO found. Cesium moves very slowly through soil. Yet what we have found as a gamma emitter is that cesium and cobalt, which are not supposed to be there, are now entering the groundwater under the tanks. The travel time for this 7 to 12 mile stretch to the river, depending which way the plume goes, is between 20 and 45 years. So the threat is urgent. Remember, they're not even going to begin operations under best of circumstances of the treatment plant to empty the tanks until the year 2019. But the travel time could be as little as 20 years. We'll just pass over. This is the borehole logging that John Broder used, and the hit. And what is the Department of Energy's plan? As in the past, they've said, we'll investigate contamination, but they've designed their characterization program to only go after contamination at a level at which we know it won't be found. So they've said, we've decided that if we find 10 to the 5th to 10 to the 6th picocuries per gram of cesium, we will then do further characterization because that's a leak. Only problem is that we know from the historic leaks that you won't even find, where we know a tank leaked, that level of contamination unless it is a massive recent leak. It's designed not to find leaks. The tanks are not stable. They're not monitored. Contamination is reaching the groundwater. And we know that we had a 50-fold increase from 1997 to 2002 from one of the two tanks where the borehole is right between the two of them. And this was not reported. Some of the recommendations include making sure that we have a RCRA, Hazardous Waste Law investigation, for closure that includes characterizing from the groundwater up, tracing the contaminant to the tanks, and then taking action on the tanks that are not stable. Instead, we're monitoring and watching and doing nothing, and we have no active program to do anything about the tank leaks until the tanks begin to get emptied. As I said, the vitrification plant, the treatment plant, will not be operational. When I wrote this slide, it was 2018. Now it's 2019. And the Department of Energy is suing right now in the Ninth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals to overturn Initiative 297's requirement that tanks be emptied and leaks cleaned up, quote, to the extent practicable. Now, that seems like a pretty eminently doable standard. It says to the extent practicable. Doesn't mean spend $1 billion on the last atom. It's practicable. The Department of Energy is suing to overturn that standard, saying that it is preempted by the Atomic Energy Act, and they cannot be ordered to do a cleanup to any particular level. Initiative 297 was based on the principle we should clean up Hanford before adding more waste. A lot of people thought this was the existing law. It made a lot of sense. A lot of people couldn't believe that this is a 2003 picture of a Department of Energy unlined ditch in which they're throwing radioactive wastes. This is the smallest ditch they had at Hanford. Most of them are 1,000 feet long and 50 feet across. And as I said, they were dumping waste until 2004. The Department of Energy is challenging the state's cleanup standard, saying that the state has no right to tell the federal government to clean up anything with radioactive contamination. They admit that we have authority over hazardous chemical contaminants, but not radionuclide contaminants. Without this authority, nothing is going to happen at Hanford in terms of cleanup. The cancer risk standard under state law, the Model Toxics Control Act, is one fatal cancer for every 100,000 people exposed through all pathways. Your drinking water, dust in the air, direct exposure. The federal Superfund law sets the same standard at 1 in 10,000, but says any state that has a stricter standard can apply it, including at federal facilities. The question is, if you have hazardous chemical cancer risk over here and a radionuclide over here, and they come together in the groundwater, doesn't it make sense that you combine the two, add the two risks together, and say, oh, it's now 5 in 100,000, we have to clean up. It's one cancer risk. We don't know if your cancer came from the chemical exposure or if it came from the radionuclide exposure. EPA across the country for 15 years has said add the two together. We said in Initiative 297, add the two together so that you know how much you have to clean up of the source and the groundwater to be safe for future use. The Department of Energy says we're preempted from doing that. And as this quote says, the regulatory scheme addressing the disposal of Atomic Energy Act, AEA, materials amply encompasses the safety aspects of uncontrolled releases, in other words, leaks, spills, etc., of radionuclides. They say, trust us, we will regulate ourselves for the cleanup of radionuclides. You tell us what to do about the hazardous chemicals. Well, what happens if we trust the Energy Department? What standard would they apply? Well, they've built a massive new landfill that they've proposed to use as a national radioactive and mixed chemical and radioactive waste dump. The Department of Energy proposes to add 3 million cubic feet of waste from off-site to this landfill. And the question is, what standard would the Department of Energy apply for the cancer risk as allowable leaks to groundwater from this for people, especially Native American who have treaty rights to use the land, the groundwater, and hunt, fish, live along the Columbia River. The Department of Energy's self-set standard allows 500 millirem per year of exposure to an individual. And they set it based on an adult. That would allow up to 25% of children under the Native American usage scenario that the tribes have developed for future use expectations for the Hanford site, 25% of children exposed to releases would die of cancer under the Department of Energy's standard that allows 500 millirem of adult exposure. 500 millirem under the what's called the Biological Effects of Ionizing Radiation 7 report. National Academy every few years updates what is the consensus of risk from exposure to radiation. And what it comes down to is, for adults, 500 millirem is 266 cancers for 10,000 adults, a risk of 2.6%. Children are up to 10 times more susceptible to get a cancer from the same exact dose as an adult. In fact, EPA has a standard that says we're supposed to use a 3 to 10 time multiplier for exposure to children when we're doing risk assessments. The Energy Department has no children exposure standard whatsoever. I'll just skip here. Right now, under a compromise, cleanup along the Columbia River is proceeding on the basis of allowing 15 millirem of exposure per year. and then saying that the soil is going to be safe enough for you to live on, or for Native Americans to exercise their treaty rights to, quote, live along and fish at usual and accustomed places along the Columbia River. 15 millirem plus the cancer risk from chemical, however, is far higher than we allow the local gas station to have contaminants in groundwater in Washington State. Essentially, it would be 80 times the state standard. And we'll just skip ahead. The cleanup relies on what we call exposure scenarios and assumptions about future use. For instance, until 2 years ago, the Energy Department said, we will assume that no one is going to live here ever. It's a national monument. No one's going to be camping. No one's going to be living here. And therefore, we're going to apply an industrial cleanup scenario because the only person who's going to be exposed is an adult worker exposed because it's going to be an industrial area. But we have 50 miles of river. It's not going to be an industrial area. People are clamoring to use the National Monument. The National Monument designation extends for a quarter mile inland. Doesn't sound like an industrial area. The Fish and Wildlife Service has a draft plan out for comment right now that says we're going to have camping in these areas. The tribes say, wait a minute, the treaties of 1855 guarantee that we have the right to come back and live here. We were kicked off this land in 1943 for the Manhattan Project, but our treaty gives us the right to live along and fish at our usual and accustomed places on the Columbia River. So, what is an exposure assumption for them about eating fish, for instance? It's about 8 to 10 times or more what we would use for an Anglo eating fish from the Columbia River. And they use different parts of the fish. Brains, the head, are a delicacy for the Yakima Nation. We don't eat that. However, radionuclides and other contaminants concentrate in the head. So if you just use the flesh of the fish and you do your exposure scenario, you come out with a very different result than if you look at the cultural usage of the entire fish by the Native American population. Now, when I said that the cancer risk was up to 25% for a Native American child, that was not changing the exposure scenario. That was essentially using the exposure scenario that was used for adults and simply applying the increased exposure if it was the same exposure for a Native American child. What happens if, however, you then run this scenario for a Native American child under more realistic usage conditions? We're supposed to do that under state law and use the highest exposure that is reasonably expected to occur under current and potential future site use considerations. And we have to assume that any controls like fences, signs, will fail to stop people from being exposed. And indeed, if you look at, for instance, all Superfund sites around the country, even Harbor Island in Seattle, highest profile Northwest Superfund site, took only 5 years for the institutional controls on that site, Harbor Island, to fail and expose people to contaminated soil when they began digging new utilities and foundations where they weren't supposed to. We're going to need a lot more public involvement and notice in order to clean up Hanford. It can't be done in a vacuum. because we have to have expected public future uses and tribal uses built into the plans from the very beginning if we're going to do an adequate cleanup to return this area to beneficial use. Ultimately, our hope is that the emphasis on notice and participation in our state law is going to increase the recognition that there's a right to know about residual contamination, that we have to design a program that says anyone using this area must be aware that there are residual risks. And that will keep up the pressure for a fuller cleanup, because the public understands that those signs won't protect them. What does the future hold for Hanford's groundwater in the river? 2 years ago, the Department of Energy issued an environmental impact statement declaring the groundwater from the central plateau spreading towards the river to be, quote, irreversibly and irretrievably committed to contamination. This was a legal designation saying that we do not have to clean up anything. We're declaring that we can't do a damn thing. And therefore, we're going to let the contaminants spread. The state of Washington sued. And the Department of Energy admitted in very unusual circumstances that its groundwater modeling for the environmental impact statement, on which it based the designation to use Hanford as a national radioactive waste dump and to build this new landfill, was seriously flawed, and that the groundwater model did not match what they actually reported in the EIS. Now, in lay terms, we call that fraud. In legal terms, they were able to enter into a settlement with the state of Washington saying the model is unreliable and we will do a new environmental impact statement, which is now due out next year. The draft will be out in 2008. We are promised that the Energy Department will start releasing elements of the groundwater model for review in the fall of 2007, which means it's a great project for next year for anyone interested in directed research or an internship. But what is the goal to clean up groundwater? The public has repeatedly said, and Heart of America Northwest and the tribes, that we need to restore beneficial use along the river. The law says that the goal of cleanup is to restore groundwater anywhere it's contaminated in the state to beneficial use in a reasonable time frame. We can restore the groundwater along the river by the year 2018, and presumably we ought to be able to restore the groundwater in the central area within 20 years after that. But it's going to take a large commitment. The Department of Energy is spending right now $12 billion on its contract to build the vitrification plant for the high-level wastes. The contract was for $4 billion. For $12 billion, every expert agrees we could clean up the groundwater completely, totally, several times over. Some of the potential projects that we're looking at include petitioning EPA to revise the radiation cancer risk cleanup standards to reflect the new radiation risk from the National Academy, petitioning ecology to adopt cancer risk exposure models that include radionuclide exposure, a petition to stop our health department. Our state health department is allowing the use of unlined trenches for a commercial radioactive waste dump at Hanford, even while the state sues the federal government over the same thing. And to review the environmental impact statement, in 2008, which is going to be the basis for the Department of Energy's, they've already said, we're going to be reproposing use of Hanford as a national radioactive and mixed waste dump. So this could be the key to stopping Hanford from being a national waste dump. The impact of Hanford is tremendous. You've seen the slide showing the contaminant spread. That's the Department of Energy's own model. It's a model that has been attacked as simplistic and inadequate to show the actual rapid spread of contamination along preferred pathways. It assumes homogeneity in the soil column, which doesn't exist. If there are many rapid pathways to the river, those impacts occur faster. If the contaminants from the Central Plateau reach the river essentially becomes unusable. The shoreline becomes unusable. We already have 1,000 times the drinking water standard in seeps along the river, seeps that become little pools that we've seen and documented children sitting in whose parents are boating down the river. It's a national monument. It's the shoreline. The upwelling is where the salmon spawn. It is the last major natural spawning ground on the main stem of the Columbia River for fall and spring Chinook salmon. It is a huge resource. And where they spawn is where the contaminants are upwelling. And frankly, people aren't going to want to use products irrigated with Columbia River water when you start hearing about several thousand times the drinking water standard of radionuclides entering the river. The Department of Energy and the contractors say, but the river dilutes it. But you know it doesn't go away. And what happens as the contaminant plume grows and grows? What happens to the Native American right to use the Hanford Reach? What happens when you have publicity over the fact that you have campgrounds along the Hanford Reach under the Fish and Wildlife Plan and exposure to carcinogens at Love Canal levels? I'm going to stop and take the questions. Natalie Troyer in the back, who is organizer with Heart of America Northwest, is also available if people want to talk about internships or something in the future. You can email us or call us, natalie@hoanw.org or jerry@hoanw.org. And one more thought is on June 4th, that's a Monday night, Natalie? Monday, June 4th, is a public hearing on the Department of Energy's cleanup plans. What are their priorities? And we'd love to have people come and comment about the need for cleaning up groundwater and not delaying. It's a major topic of the hearing. It's at the Mountaineers, 3rd Ave West, down near the PI building, west of Key Arena. The Mountaineers at 7 p.m. on June 4th. Questions? Yes.
Kind of a two-part question. Let's suppose the Gates Foundation was willing to fund the cleanup, and you're proposing how you were going to do that. You mentioned people said they could do it for the buildings, but they didn't understand what exactly that cleanup would be like. The second part is, could the government regulations and the powers that be make it feasible to do that?
The question is two parts. One is, how would you go about cleaning up the groundwater and at what cost? And secondly, is it possible under government regulations, et cetera? The second question is easier to answer than the first. Or maybe that's because I'm a lawyer. I like that one. The law, as we believe it reads, which is contested by the Energy Department, says you shall clean up to restore beneficial use of the resource, the groundwater resource. And that's true for all Superfund sites. The Energy Department says that doesn't apply to radionuclides. And that's what's in front of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. if we lose essentially the only lever that we've got for cleanup of Hanford and all the other nuclear weapons sites in the country on radionuclide front goes away. So the stakes are very, very high. If we win, then we get to come back and answer the second question. Can we do it? When? What is the technology? There are some radionuclides that we do not have a practicable technology for, like tritium, which is the H and the H bomb. It's produced at Hanford in large quantities and is flowing with the groundwater, and you can't chemically distinguish a molecule of water with tritium versus a molecule without it. There are some promising technologies, and one key issue is whether or not we can force the Energy Department to do more than a few million dollars worth of research and development and testing every year. Because that's all they're doing nationwide. And Hanford's not the only site with such a problem. The research and development program is a pittance for the Energy Department in terms of cleanup. It's about 0.1% of what they spend on nuclear power promotion and research in the upcoming year's budget. So we need to invest in research. For most of the contaminants, off-the-shelf technology is available to clean soil, and essentially a lot of it is simply removing soil, treating it, and then repackaging it and burying it again in a proper landfill. So attacking the sources, and then removal from groundwater. We know, for instance, how to remove technetium-99 from groundwater. We don't want it to get in the groundwater because it's very mobile, but it's removable. We know how to remove uranium. The Energy Department has refused to do any project to remove the uranium where the uranium plume is, and said, trust us, natural attenuation will rectify the uranium plume within 5 years. Instead, it grew dramatically. One of the reasons it grew dramatically is that they didn't adequately clean up the soil column. So as the river level rises every spring, it essentially flushes and cleans the soil, and you get more uranium, and you will unless you clean up the soil column properly. There are significant challenges. Most of the cleanup of soil is limited to the top 15 feet, and yet we have huge hits of contaminants at the 40-foot level. We can clean up there, but we're not doing it. But soil cleanup, in terms of the money, soil cleanup is cheap compared to treating high-level nuclear waste. So the cost estimates for doing the job right on the soil and groundwater are dwarfed by what the Energy Department is spending on the cost overrun for its contractor. Yes?
You recommended to just pump the tanks to clean them out. What would you do with that?
The goal is to glassify the waste that comes out of the tanks. It's called vitrification. The plan to do half of the volume is $8 billion over budget and not going to be operational till the year 2019. However, independent experts have said you could start one portion of the plant and get it glassifying and emptying the single shell tanks by the year 2011. That portion of the plant is mostly built. It's not as complex as the rest of it. It's a long story, but essentially the Energy Department and its contractors have always chosen to do the most expensive and complicated treatment, even while every independent engineer said that's the road to ruin, instead of simple glassification of the wastes.
Thank you.
Thank you all.